Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Hello, everybody. We are officially broadcasting. So the webinar has started. We're going to start seeing the number of attendees, you know, kind of going up. So first of all, welcome everybody to the webinar series today. We're pumped to have you with us. I'm going to run you quickly through what to expect from today's webinar, and then we're going to get rocking and rolling very, very soon. First, you might be wondering, why is there one person in this panel that only shows a beautiful image versus streaming video? Ryan Robinson. Ryan is the mastermind behind the webinar series. He's the reason we're all here together. He's managing the webinar in the background, and he's going to be mostly active in the chat session. I get this all the time at webinars where somebody at some point will ask me, why does nobody allow Ryan to speak? Right? So I wanna explain to people that Ryan is in the background kind of running the show and organizing everything for us. What we're gonna do today is, there you go, and there's some video from Ryan. What we're gonna do today is very simple. We're gonna do, the first part of the webinar is gonna be a panel, where we're gonna share some experiences, tactics, and high level thoughts on terms of how to be more successful with your sales emails. And the second part, and the most important part of the webinar, is gonna be your Q&A. So here's how this is gonna work. There's a button in Zoom that says Q&A. At any point in time, as we're speaking in this webinar, if you have a question, click that button, please, and write out your question in there, right? If you write your questions in chat, the problem is that because there's so much activity in chat, we're never gonna be able to find these questions and really go through all of them. So if you really want your questions to be answered, always click the Q&A button, write it in there, and I promise you we're gonna try our best to go through every question and give you an answer and help as much as humanly possible. I think in chat, we're already seeing people chiming in from where in the world they are, and this is how we're gonna get started with this webinar. I'm gonna do a quick intro of the people on the panel. I know Dustin had a few connectivity issues, but boom, now he's here, so that's beautiful. All right. We haven't even started officially, so your timing is perfect.
Yeah, so what sorry we're gonna about
that. Do is, no worries. What we're gonna do is a quick intro of the panelists. They're gonna tell you who they are, maybe where they are first, since this is such an international crowd, where in the world you are, who you are, and why you care about email, why email is something you are passionate about. And once we've all introduced ourselves, we're gonna jump in and rock and roll. Don, do you wanna be the first to do the honor?
I would love to. Thanks so much. Hello, everybody. My name is Don Irwin. I am calling you from beautiful San Francisco, California. I currently am the head of revenue at MixMax, and I'm extremely passionate about email. I've been in corporate America sales for 30-ish years now, and email is, for me, a way of communicating with people at scale and a way of communicating with people in different time zones and industries and everything, and I'm very excited to be here.
Awesome. Thank you, Don. Colin, you want to go next?
Yeah, sure, man. Thanks for having us on here. My name's Colin Stewart. I'm dialing in from Vancouver, British Columbia. Sorry, Jacqueline, this is the real Vancouver. I see a couple people from, Washington on, so I gotta throw my barbs there. Why email? I'm the co-CEO of Predictable Revenue. So technically, I'm the co-CEO of a book about cold email. I got my start. We've been running this for about 6 years together, or 4 years together, but I've been doing this for 6 years. I'm here, where I am today with a team full of, 30, we bootstrapped our company to 30 people, all because of a cold email. We can get into the story if it's relevant, but yeah, that's me.
Awesome. Yeah. Colin's partner, Aaron Ross, coined the term cold calling 2.0, which was a smart way of reaching out to large companies through a cold email. So yeah, you guys have done fantastic work in that realm. Dustin, you're next.
All right. So I'm Dustin Crawford. I'm with Intercom, which is an end-to-end platform for live chat. I'm here in San Francisco as well. And I have been in sales for about 14, 15 years. And I'm actually a sales leader for the sales development program over here. As you can tell by my shirt, I'm just gung-ho about outbound, inbound, and that's the reason why I'm kind of like staying into the program with sales development, just because I absolutely love it, and it's forever changing, and it's changing constantly that you have to keep changing like your process and strategies. And so that's the reason why I love it. And that's the reason why I'm, you know, so happy to be a part of this panel.
Awesome. Well, I don't want to hyperbole here, but I was just wondering as I was hearing your guys' intros, if there's ever been a webinar with more expertise in terms of sales emails, both from the companies that we all work for and for kind of the work that we've done in the past. I'm not sure. I don't want to proclaim us number one, but I think it will be hard to rival this group. All right. So this morning I was in Croatia. Right now I'm in Germany. Don't ask me why I'm in the middle of travel and made a pit stop to be able to do this webinar with all of you. I'm one of the co-founders and CEO of a company called Close.io. We're an inside sales CRM, email automation, email sequences, sales emails are a big part of the software that we've built, along with a bunch of other things. And I personally have, my entrepreneurial superpower has always been sales in one way or another. And sales emails have played a massive part in my life, in my career, from hiring incredible people to raising millions to closing incredible deals. The good that email has brought to my life is can't be measured in just dollars and cents. So I'm passionate about email. And this is how we're going to start the panel. This is one of my first questions, because I really don't want to talk too high level, right? Is email dead or not? Well, let's look at some stats, people still opening emails. I don't want to waste any of our times on some very high level stuff, because I assume if you're in this webinar, you're sending emails and you want to get better at it, right? You're just already decided that email is something that you need to do. You just want to know how to get better at it. And that's really how I want us to get started. I'll flip the switch real quickly, because sometimes you can do a lot of good by avoiding some really big mistakes versus just doing things really excellently. Colin, I want to start with you. My first question is for you specifically, which is, you know, you guys advise and consult and coach and work with a lot of companies, especially on their cold email outreach strategy. What is one of the biggest mistakes that companies do today, sales teams commit today when it comes to their email strategy? Something you see over and over and over again. And if we can just stop one team from doing this, we made the world a better place. What's kind of one thing that pops to your mind instantly?
It's kind of the first thing that comes to mind is really, it's kind of a combination, right? It's you're emailing the wrong people with the wrong messaging, right? I think the number one mistake I see is founders, CEOs say, hey, salespeople, you know, here's what we sell. Go sell some shit. I can swear here, right? That's
yeah. Okay. Are you kidding? Yes. Feel comfortable to speak as natural as you want.
I thought Ryan might be sitting there on the buzzer, or we might have a 5-second delay or something. I know you've got a reputation, but I wanted to make sure I was good. I think I find it ironic, because I'm the CEO or co-CEO of this company, and you know, we sort of we've asked the same of our sales team. But I think the biggest mistake is coming from leadership is saying, go sell some shit. I don't care to who, but this is our product. This is kind of who we sell to, and go. And they don't document, you know, essentially from your senior management, you need to be getting a list, like almost down to a list of here's your top 100 accounts. Here's your top, 200, 1,000 accounts. Here's the sort of the bottom of the, tier one, tier two, tier three accounts. Instead of just saying, okay, this is who we sell. Why don't you sales teams go figure it out. And then, because no matter what you do after that, no matter how many blog posts you read or how many webinars you attend and how good the advice is on the messaging, if you're not sending these emails to the right people, why bother?
Yeah. Don't we all wish there was like, you could just share a template with us and we could send that template to anyone in the world and it always works. But that's really what selfishly we all want, but the truth is very inconvenient, which is, if you send the best thing to the wrong person, it doesn't really matter what your email says, right? It'll never convert. It'll never have a chance to do anything, right? So it all starts at the very beginning, which is understanding who, should hear from you, who is your ideal customer, who is your prospect, who isn't, have good data, and then reach out to the relevant person. And then you can work on the timing, the messaging, and do your best to get their attention and get them to respond. But if you're trying to reach to such a broad audience that 80% of them should never buy your product and are totally the wrong people, then no subject line hack we can share with you will fix anything, right?
Exactly.
All right, beautiful. So, the fundamentals are always in place. You need to know who your customer is and who you're reaching out to. Now let's talk a little bit about the next step, right? If we move through the kind of user experience of the email, you know, let's say we know who the right person is, right? And let's say we've identified that email, that persona, and we're now thinking about the overall email strategy before we go into the specifics of a subject line or the body of text or anything like that. If you know that you know who you're trying to reach and you're thinking about emailing them, Don, I want to ask you, you know, what should be the strategy that you have in place before you do that? A lot of people are asking us, should I first call somebody and then email? Should I interact with them on LinkedIn or on Twitter, on social media, and then send an email? Should I just send the email and then follow up with other things? Just strategically, where would you say does the email fit in kind of the relationship, especially in the very early beginning of the conversation or if the connection that we're trying to establish? What have you seen work particularly well? How do you think and your team think about email as a way to start the conversation or start the relationship?
Yeah, I'm a fan of sending the email first. Obviously, you know, if you know who you're talking with, you know, you have an opportunity to send emails out at scale. And at least then as you make that next follow-up phone call, it gives you a discussion point following up based on the email that I just previously sent you. And adding on to what Colin had said previously, from the persona-based, I think that first initial email, I think a lot of companies get really caught up in KPI. And you know, you have to do so many of this and so many of that. And if I think you manage too many teams to KPI numbers, people get email burnout, phone call burnout. I think when you're sending a first email to a group of people, taking a little bit of time and doing some research on who the company is, what they do, the person that you're specifically sending that email to, and making that email outreach as personalized as you possibly can, gives you your best chance of getting a response and a reply. And it comes across a lot more that you've done your homework and you understand more specifically who you're trying to reach out to.
Yeah, I can piggyback off of that, right? So I think the first and foremost thing is obviously send out an email. I would also include in a LinkedIn outreach, right? So I wouldn't put a note. I would just add them. So that way you're just getting your name out there before you actually make that phone call, because it goes to their personal email. Now it's going to their work email. They've seen your name. So now it's like, that basically has that connection. How have I seen this person's name before? Do I know them? And then they kind of like start to like double think, I got that email. I forgot about that, right? So kind of going through your homework beforehand, obviously the persona is like a big thing, like Colin said, but I would also just kind of, what your technology is something better than what has been previously in place. So you find those laggard technologies and you kind of start to like build up that strategy. What are they using? What have we won against before? And then you start to like formalize, oh man, there's a common theme. This technology is a laggard and this is how we won previously. So you actually already know the pain of that particular person that you're going to outreach to. So that way you're starting to like formalize your personal outreach, kind of like Donna was saying, right? Because then you take something personal, maybe you find on their LinkedIn, but then you also have what their pain points have been.
Can I add one piece of context from yes. on what I said? When we're talking about sales channels, I totally agree with Dustin, totally agree with Don. The only context I'd add is when you're thinking about channels, you want to think about, is this my top one customer, right? Is this on my top 10 list? Is it on my top 100 list? Is it on my top 1,000 or my bottom 10,000, right? That's going to dictate the sort of channels that make sense, make financial sense for you to invest in, that's going to, where you can actually warrant to spend the right amount of time. I know people for their top 10, they've taken their top executives on, because we're talking like $1 million deal. They flew their executives to some mountain where they raced Ferraris, and they probably spent a couple $100,000 on that event. Would I do that for, you know, my prospects? No, I'd lose money every, you know, hand over fist if I did that. So it's all about sort of calibrating to, you know, what is the dollar amount that we expect to get out of this account? Okay, what can we afford to, and what channels can we afford to invest in for these levels?
Yep. Very, very good point. Thanks for double clicking on that. And then let me just say, you might be losing all your money if you raise Ferraris with all your customers, but you'll lose it in style, right? I mean, there's something to be said about that. All right. So first of all, lots of questions. Like, this is already an amazing crowd. I had a sense for that. For the ones of you that didn't hear me earlier or joined a little bit later, please, please, please use the Q&A button. There's a Q&A button in Zoom. Click that one and write your questions in there in chat. When it's going to get lost. We're not going to be able to look through chat and parse through it and try to pick and choose your questions. Please use the Q&A button at any time to ask your question. Then we'll get to them very soon, actually. So I want to ask one question quick to the group. Whoever feels most passionate, you should grab the question and run with it, which is the point of personalization, right? So a lot has been, there's a lot of talk about it. Obviously, you know, a lot of us are building technologies that allow for a certain level of automated, you know, emailing in, at scale and emailing at personalization at scale to a certain degree. But I really want to get practical and tactical here because a lot of times the thing that I observe is that people overcomplicate things, sales teams overcomplicate things, they go too fancy, too crazy, and they think we're not converting people to customers, so personalization is going to be the weapon, the hammer that's going to fix that problem, right? Instead of thinking about it as like a more sensitive instrument that can really enhance something, but it's not going to solve all problems as like the one-all be-all. So what are some best practices when it comes to personalization, or what are some don'ts that people should avoid, things that a lot of companies are trying and failing with? Does anybody feel strong to have some strong data examples that you want to share with the group?
Yeah, I guess I can kind of leave with this one. So some of the things that I've seen because of Sandler, it's like, hey, we work with so-and-so company and we've been able to increase their revenue. Everyone is saying that. It's kind of lost its touch, if you will. So that's where you got to really be personalized and understand, like I mentioned before, about the technology and really understand the technology that are currently using and the pain points that go along with that. And try to get some validation somehow, some way internally to get like a champion. I think that way actually leads to revenue conversation. I know how they make money. I know the system that they have. I know basically if they change, it'll be more efficient for them to make more money. So I think that's really how I personalize things and have my team personalize everything that they do. You could do it at scale, or you could do it really specific if you're actually calling and you're poking around to like managers to try to figure out what those specific pain points are. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Dustin. So here's the you know, I see so many good questions. I'm keeping an eye on all the Q&A questions that are coming in, and they're just too good. I think we're going to launch into the Q&A part of the webinar a little earlier to be able to really address all that. But the last question that I want to ask before we go into Q&A mode, and again, anybody click Q&A at any point, write down your question, we'll get to it, is maybe have everybody here before we go into Q&A share kind of like three tips specifically on now the craft of writing the email, right? From subject line to intro, to call to action, to anything else that you can think of. Maybe just like two or three tips that you find to be best practices that your sales teams are using and seeing great results, or your client sales teams are using and seeing great results. And you're like, I know that if you do these things, you're gonna be in a really good spot. Always welcome to hear counter examples, right? I always love to tell people not just what to do, but what not to do or what to avoid. So if there's like three things you absolutely hate and that drive you crazy and that kill the conversion and success of an email, happy to share that. I'm going to start with you. We're going to go Colin, Don, and Dustin, kind of top three things you want to share about writing the email part, specifically how to do that better.
Gotcha. I think my favorite place to start, and this comes from, you know, I haven't done formal Sandler training. I've done a bit. I've done some Miller Hyman stuff, which is sort of how I grew up. And I remember an old mentor of mine, when I was trying to figure out, you know, scripting for cold calls and how to talk to customers, he said, just stop selling, take a week off, go visit every single one of our customers, sit in their office and just watch them. Write down how they talk about our product, write down what they think about it, how they think about it, what problems it solves. Just shut up. Don't talk about our products. Just listen to the words that they're saying. And then take as many notes as possible, try and get their exact quotes, the exact terminology that they're using, and then use that terminology when you're speaking to them and use that terminology when you're speaking to your prospects. And that's had a massive impact on me because I find it's so easy to get, you know, talking about, you know, especially when you're, you know, you're selling software, you got some really cool features. Everybody wants to talk about AI. Everybody wants to talk about, you know, the UI is great and this and that. But at the end of the day, people don't really care about the UI. They don't care about AI. They don't care about any of the features. They care about what it's going to help them achieve. And so the two things that I really pulled out of that was, one, let's try and sell to them, or let's have a conversation with them, selling or not selling. Let's have a conversation with them in the language that they're using. So let's adopt their terminology, and that's going to help us resonate. It's going to make sure that there are fewer, there's less packet loss between, you know, when I send the message and they receive the message. So I think that's the first biggest one. And then really it's talking about, in cold email, the challenge is you want to get their attention really quickly. And then you want to convince them that this is something that they should spend more than 10 seconds on, right? You want to, they open your email and they're immediately going to hit that archive button. So how do I quickly convince you not to hit that archive button? And I like to think about it. What I like to think about is, how do I get them to that magic moment? How do I show off that beautiful moment in my software, in my service, in whatever it is that I'm doing, that they're gonna be like, damn, that's the reason why we pay our invoice every month. I love that, right? It's that aha moment, that goosebump moment where the customer's just like, yeah, I love paying your invoice every month because X. How do I communicate that in a line or two, in a GIF, in a video, in a whatever it is? How do I get to that? And it's really going to depend on what the product is and what that magic moment is. But it's, how do I communicate in their language? How do I show off that magic moment as early in the process as possible? Because the later you put it, you know, the less likely it is that they're going to see it. So I want to get that as upfront and personal as possible. You can't always jam a GIF in the subject line. I think that'd be great if you could. It'd be like the most effective, you know, method for like a week. And then everybody would be like, I'm sick and tired of my subject line box being like this big. Screw you, Colin.
So. Beautiful. All right. Thank you, Colin. Don, you're next.
Yeah. So thinking about cold emails, we've done a lot of A/B testing. And one of the things that I find that we get a higher open rate is by something as simple as putting the person's name that you're sending the email to in the subject line. It seems a lot more personalized right out of the gate. Then once you get into the body of the email, the second thing that I like is less is more. All of us receive cold emails, and if it's a novel, you're deleting it before you even get halfway through it. If you get quick and to the point, maybe with a couple of very succinct bullets, by the time you make the decision to read the email or delete the email, you've read about 2/3 of the email anyway. And the final thing, following up with what Colin said, I'm a fan of rich media inside of the email. We use a lot of polls here. Just, is this something you're interested? Yes, no. It's a very quick, draws your eyes specific. If it's a cut and paste of the solution, or if it's a cut and paste of some success that we've had, or an email success reply that we got from one of our customers, this is how we could help you. Something short, sweet, to the point, and some rich media in there. That's just something a little more exciting than just boring text is what we find very helpful on our end.
Awesome. Yeah, that's all great stuff. I think that we do a little bit further than that. What we actually do is say we spoke with or referred by in the subject line. It really helps because, you know, as leaders, you know that we just get bombarded with emails all day, every day. So if I actually see a familiar name in that subject line, that's probably means that they had a conversation and that I should probably open it at the very least. And then in the body, talking about, hey, I spoke with so-and-so and this is what I have uncovered. So that right there gives you the credibility for them to read even more of what you have to say. And so we've been finding great success, you know, using that format.
Sweet. Good stuff. All right. So here's the fair warning. I've been like glancing over the question, trying to like organize them in my mind. There's a lot. We're going to have to be really sharp to try to even attempt to get through all of them. And then there are some questions where it's like, this is something all like everybody will want to chime in. Like I already had to like force myself to be like pushing me out of answering most of these because I feel so passionate about, I have something to say about this and I need to share it. So we're going to have to be somewhat disciplined, gentlemen, here to attempt to finish this. Also, fair warning, you know, I said every question goes. You people can ask anything you want, but then we're going to answer anything we want, right? We have some say in this. Some of the questions that you ask are so fundamentally open that it take us a whole hour and would still not be done, right? So, you know, how do I fix my business? How do I understand who my customer is? It's a very big question that needs a lot of nuance to be useful. And if we just brush over it, we might as well not answer it. So I'm going to try to really go to the specific ones and see if we can be useful. All right. So the first one I'll throw to you, Dustin, because I think you should be, you're the most interesting person, at least to answer this, I think, is chat versus email. Somebody asks, is email dead? Is chat taking over the role of email? What do you think, Dustin? What are your experiences there?
Sure. No, I appreciate the question. So I think live chat is obviously a great forum. I think that people have different communication styles and you just never know which one that is. So for email, obviously it's just kind of get your name out there. You can even put a live chat link in there. So you could tell them, hey, when you're ready to have a conversation, I'm here at any point in time. But you can also like forward a lot of your emails to your live chat inbox. So that's one of the greatest things that you can just kind of condense all that. I just think that for live chat, just in general, it's two different beasts, right? So you have a live chat that these are people who are coming to your site because of marketing efforts. They don't feel comfortable anymore leaving a lead form filling out a lead form. So those are the people that you want to capture. They're just in the discovery phase, if you will, nurturing, as we call it for like in the marketing standpoint. And then we have just emails. Emails for outbound is one of the best tools to just kind of do it at mass. And so it's difference between live chat, people are already knowing about your product and services, just probably looking for some questions, versus email, they have no clue who you are. So you kind of have to do both. And then now we're starting to see more and more texting. You know, there's a lot of different things that you're trying to do. You have to do it all in a cadence, just because, like I said, you never know what communication style is going to work.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. All right. The next question I'm going to take, which there's like five or six people that ask the same question, basically. Shorter, is shorter better than longer? Yes. Shorter is typically better than longer, right? Whatever the length of your email is, if it's longer than a few sentences, format, don't assume people will read everything because they don't. You don't deserve all of their time. They've never heard of you. You don't have that social capital to demand people read word for word everything you've written. People want to scan and quickly figure out who you are, what you want, and what to do with this. So make it easy for them, right? The easiest way to get your email deleted is to send like a four-page thing unformatted. Right, I'm instantly going to delete you because my assumption is you don't respect your time and my time. So this could never be a good relationship for the both of us. So please keep your messages short because you don't deserve a lot of their time in the beginning of the relationship. If you have to write a little bit more formatted, please don't do super long emails. That's that. All right, next question is,
I hit on that one real quick? So
yes.
Good test of this is send it to yourself. And if you read it on your cell phone, and if it's taking you too long, or if you have to scroll, it's too long. So it's a good check.
You mean, Dustin, that we're going to have to use the golden rule? Don't send emails you would not want to receive yourself? That's actually a beautiful rule in general, right? How many of the emails that you're writing would you ever want to read yourself? And this comes, I think this is a good hack for user experience. Like, we send emails because we have selfish needs. I need to hit my quarterly numbers. I need to prospect. I need revenue. But we need to understand that we also need to hit the recipient's needs, and their needs need to be hit first, right? They have a full inbox. They have a busy life. They see your email in their inbox. How is their experience here, right? Is it good? Do they understand what's going on? Is this a happy email? Is this a confusing one? Put yourself in the shoes of the person that you're sending emails to if you want those emails to become great and then to have great results. Next question for you, Colin. Somebody is basically complaining a little bit that they're in the services business. They're like, I'm writing cold emails, but I'm selling a service, so I can't just point you to a really cool demo or something like that. How do I sell a services business in a cold email? You're running part of your business is a services business, so who better to answer that than you, Colin? How do you write great cold emails for a services business?
Cool. It's a great question. I think the challenge that every services business has is differentiation, right? If you're another dev shop and you're saying, oh, we have the best Ruby guys, or our team knows Angular better than anybody else, these are all easy to replicate, easy to, there's so many people that are, that can also say these things, right? And it, unless you literally have guys that are on the Rails core team, or you know what I mean? Like that literally wrote the code that everybody's using, it's going to be really hard to differentiate that. So one is like, what is your differentiator, right? With a services business, it makes it hard. I think with a lot of the cold email advice we get, I mean, look at the people on the panel, right? We've got software, guy who runs them sort of half and half. These companies are doing new, awesome, amazing things that haven't been done before. And I'm not saying your service business necessarily isn't. It's just, it's harder to communicate that. Because it's, you know, chances are there are, you know, more than one of the companies. It just, in the grand scheme of things, this is what we see. And so when we're writing cold emails, it's not just about how do I write a good email. It's how do I differentiate between every other person that's sending the same thing and saying the same thing. We're in the lead generation space. I don't know how many of the people on this, on the call here get calls saying, hey, I can book you meetings. Don, how many of those have you gotten in your email or on your LinkedIn?
More than I can count.
I get those emails. I'm the CEO of a company that does that. And right. I get so many of these untargeted. And so like, there's just a massive amount of people that are also saying the exact same thing. And so the thing that you need to be aware of is, how do I stand out? It's just accept that this is the normal, right? This is the bar. As a services company, the bar is higher for us. Because when we communicate what it is we do, it's not always totally differentiated from, okay, you know, this is the first time I've been able to chat with my customers, you know, through my website, or the first time that I've had, you know, great email templating in Gmail, or that I've had a CRM that my salespeople actually like using, right? Like those are some pretty strong differentiators, and I'm sure I butchered all three of them, but it sort of gets to the essence of like what I understand and what you're at that level you're communicating in an email. And so that's the level that we need to get to, is how do we effectively communicate that differentiator? I've definitely seen it work. We have tons of customers that are services, whether they're more hard services where they're actually delivering, you know, a combination of like hard goods and services around them. Customers that I never thought would ever be able to use cold email that has said, hey, is this going to work for me? I'm like, I don't know. Like we had a guy who's a beverage consultant. They just closed, they've been with us for a year and a half. They just closed $1 million deal. I never would have guessed. We had an engineering services company selling into construction space. I told them, I used to sell diesel generators. I used to sell into this industry. It probably won't work. They're like, yeah, we think you're wrong. So they signed up and they closed $1 million deal 7 months in. It's like, okay, so I'm wrong. It's not about services versus product. It's about the level that you need to go to communicate how differentiated you are and get them to that sort of, this is why we're different. This is why you need to respond to this email.
Sweet. Awesome. Thank you so much, Colin. Don, you're next. The question here is, somebody's asking, you know, when I was doing cold email myself, I would just do research on LinkedIn, find, you know, a handful of people every day and then write them a really personal email. How do you do that once the team grows and once you want to hit bigger and bigger scale? How do you do the email list generation at the beginning of the process, basically at scale and with more people than just one? What have you seen? What are you guys doing? What are kind of some best practices that you can share?
So I think we can use tools that allow you to do sequences and do mass emails and have the ability to do some A/B testing type emails. And going back to a previous comment of persona based, is one of the things that I see a lot of people do wrong, I think, is sending a blast templated email to the multiple people within the same organization with the exact same message. And so I think it's okay to send multiple emails to multiple people in the same organization as long as they have a different message and they're more persona-based. I can send it to five different people in five different orgs within the same company, and it's okay if they talk amongst themselves that they've received an email from my organization or from somebody on my sales team. But if the messaging is different and it feels a little more personal to what matters to that specific individual versus just a blanketed email template that everybody got. And then at the water cooler, they're sharing the exact same message. You've discredited yourself immediately right there within that organization. So to me, I still like a little bit of a personal touch on the subject line. I think it gets them to open it a little bit more. I've taken the time to at least put your name in the email, then depending on what the body and the message that you're trying to send. So at scale, I think using a sequence, A-B testing with the different personas so that the message that you're sending at scale is different. You can see which one's working, what's not working. And it's okay to send to multiple people. Just don't send them the exact same message if they care about different things within the organization.
Yeah, I want to piggyback off of like what Don is saying. I think you got to kind of take a step back and realize what accounts you're actually going after before you even look at the personas. It's so important that you get the actual companies right. And it could go, again, laggard in the technology, and you're better than them and you keep winning over them. Or is it a certain territory? You've got to like hone and do the A-B testing with the actual accounts first and foremost to see what you're actually winning against, and then get to the personas, and then you can start doing your outreach. So you got to do your homework and start using data to actually quantify and really realize who you should be going after and why.
Beautiful. All right, next question. There's actually two questions I'll combine. One was, what's an effective way to write a follow-up email? That person is using the "have you seen my previous email" a lot, and they feel quite basic. And then somebody else was basically asking, how does everybody feel about using humor in email? Stelly has written about the Cookie Monster GIF in follow-ups and stuff like that. So I'll combine these two things. You can use humor in the follow-up, but everything always depends on the people that you are selling to, right? Are these people that will appreciate a Cookie Monster GIF of the Cookie Monster waiting, looking at the watch, waiting, right? Are they gonna laugh at that, or are they gonna be offended or confused, right? Not everybody on this planet will like a GIF or will get it. So it really depends on who your audience is, if you should use humor or not. And it depends on you, how humorous you are and how bulletproof you are with your funny lines and your funny GIFs, right? If you've seen a lot of success, please go ahead and keep using it. But you don't have to be funny, this, that, or the other to be successful in follow-up. I'll give just one very specific, very simple follow-up kind of template, and then we'll get to the next question, which is the 1-2-3 template, right? So if you follow up a few times, make it easy for people to respond and give you some more information. Part of what creates friction to reply is that they have to think about what to write, right? We've all had that moment where we started writing something, and because we quite didn't know how to say it, we just left the editor and did something else, right? So a simple email template is just to give people three options. Tell them, hey, I've tried to get in touch with you a few times. It's probably one of three scenarios what's going on right now. Scenario number one, you've already chosen somebody else. Scenario number two, you're still in the market, but you just need a little bit more time. You want me to check in again. And scenario number three, something else, or some people will use humor in that. Maybe you've fell down, broken your leg. I need to call 911. You can't get to your phone or something. Just hit reply with a number, 1, 2, or 3, and I'll know what to do next, right? And people, that usually has a very big response rate in many areas because people both appreciate the thoughtfulness of it and because it's so easy to click reply and give you a number versus writing a whole, sentence or a bunch of sentences about why they haven't responded to you yet. All right, enough of that. The next one that I want to throw out there is email subject lines. Colin, I want to throw that one to you. People ask, what are some best practices or what's some good kind of, is there some one or two good examples that you have that you are willing to share with people?
Yeah, there's only one really good subject line that is ever going to work, and I'm not going to share it with you.
All right, moving on. Well, yeah. You can get in touch with predictablerevenue.com.
We've got one secret subject line.
There you go. If you fill out the form of predictable revenue, Colin might give you that subject line for payment, right?
Yeah, exactly. You got to buy the book. It's a $60,000 book with like one page. I think it really comes down to Don alluded to subject lines earlier, putting people's name in there. You either want to go a personalized approach, right? Because if you think about your content, the message sequence that you're sending should tell the story. The subject line is the sort of the description of the book, really. Here's why you should read the rest of this. Like we've talked about personalization, personalizing that, if that's the level that you're engaging at, is a great one. Otherwise, short and simple. One of my personal favorites that I really like and I find really effective as a, you know, I've used it as a follow-up template. I've used it as an initial. It all has to fit in the story. Quick question, right? It's nice. It's short. It generates curiosity. It doesn't ramble on for 5 minutes like I do.
Beautiful. All right.
If I can tie into that, I've also seen ones that don't work at all, where some people will put in the subject line, you know, as if they're replying to a message that they got from a company. So they'll put regarding dot dot semicolon and then answer something, or forward, you know, semicolon, and the person that you're sending that mail knows that they never sent you anything, and that just comes across a little sketchy. And so I would avoid doing subject lines that are a little misleading, that you're replying to something that somebody never actually ever even sent you.
I love that. Thank you so much, John, for this. People all the time ask me, Stelly, what's the most effective subject line you've ever seen in terms of open rates? And I always tell them the best one I've ever received was one that said, very disappointed, dot, dot, dot. And I saw that I instantly zoomed into it because I was like, what did we mess up, right? What did we do wrong? And I opened the email and it continues, dot, 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 that we've not been able to connect. I've emailed you multiple times before and you've never replied. And I went, motherfucker, you got me, right? Respect, you got me. And then I deleted it, right? And then I deleted it because tricking me into opening the email is not the end of the relationship. Right? It's the beginning. So if you lie to me at the very beginning of our relationship, I don't want to be in business with you. I guarantee you, if the subject line said, I have your parents in my basement with a gun at their head, it would be a very high open rate. Even for people without living parents, they would open it, right? My dad doesn't live anymore. I would open that email and try to check out what is going on. But that doesn't mean that that's going to lead to anything productive, right? Don't over-optimize. Don, Colin, Dustin, you guys have all said it in one way or another. Don't over-optimize for a certain number and forget why we're doing this in the first place, just to get a big open rate. That is not the end goal at the end of the day. So thank you so much, John, for bringing this up again. All right. With that out of the way, so here's a question, Dustin, for you, which is the question of intervals, right? People are wondering, what is the best time in between emails? Should it be, you know, a day, 2 days, a week? Is there some kind of a magical formula? How would you, if you're following up, if you're sending multiple emails to somebody, and let's assume in this scenario, they're not responding instantly, how do you space, how do you time email one from email two? What are kind of some best practices that you've seen?
Yeah, it's always like the magical question, right? It's like how often and what to put in there. So I think one of the biggest things that you want to do is obviously be more aggressive in the first 2 weeks. And then it starts to trickle off from there. But you want to sprinkle in a little bit of everything else, right? Phone calls. And so what we do is basically send out an email, add them on LinkedIn first and foremost. That way you're getting your name out there, phone call. 2 days later, you know, then you want to follow up with another email to ensure that they got that. The same time, what we do is actually go to LinkedIn and just ask them, like, hey, I sent you an email. Did you happen to actually review that? Because a lot of times, you know, as leaders, we're getting so many emails that we probably just didn't even see it or even open it. So a respectful time is to, you know, actually ask them 2 days later in an email, hey, did you happen to review this? But also go on to LinkedIn as just another avenue. I don't use LinkedIn as another email source. And I know that a lot of people are actually doing that. So I just wanted to just say, like, hey, don't use that necessarily as, you know, another email. Because if they ignored you once, then they might be ignoring you twice. So use it in a different format. And so we're just trying to follow up on, you know, phone call or voicemail that you left, and also follow up from your previous emails that you sent. So that's kind of like how we conduct it here. And I've actually seen it work pretty well that way.
Nope, you're on mute there, Stelly.
Happens every time at least once.
I'm glad it wasn't me to do it first.
Yeah. Of course. All right. Thanks to you for helping out here. Don, the next question is for you, and that relates to you know, Christopher's question, which is not, you know, not so much about tracking the open rate, but tracking how many times somebody opened. How valuable is it to see this the recipient opened it 12 times. Sometimes there's crazy numbers, 69 times opened, and people go, wow, this email circulates in the organization like crazy. Or just open twice or once. Like, what is the value of that? Have you seen any patterns, any best practices, any advice or insights to share on like how meaningful it is if an email is being opened a lot of times by the same person or with the recipient or a few times?
No, that's a great question. And internally here, my sales team, we have a rule set up that if anybody opens our email on at least a third time, that we get a Slack notification sent to us that so-and-so has opened your email a third time. And maybe they forwarded on to somebody. To me, it's clear that if they've opened the email up multiple times, there is clearly some interest there. And I absolutely get that this entire webinar is about optimizing emails and everything. But for me, it's as soon as I get a notification that somebody has opened my email at least three times or forwarded it on to multiple people and those individuals have opened it. Now I've got either one person opening it more than three times or I've got four or five people opening the email once. Based on a forward from somebody that I sent the initial email to, I'm picking up the phone and calling those people because there's absolutely some interest going on there. And as quickly as I can get to where does the interest lie, then obviously the knowledge of knowing how many times people has opened your email or forwarded is extremely useful.
Beautiful. Yes. Thank you so much.
Awesome, Don.
Somebody in chat and not in Q&A, please hit Q&A to ask questions. But somebody mentioned that, you know, open rates and click rates, all these numbers can sometimes be misleading. They're not, you know, perfect science. And I just want to double click. That is true. Just because somebody opened something many times or even opened it at all doesn't mean that you have a complete picture of context, intent, and all that. But there are strong indicators, right? That will not always be true, but many times be true. So just wanted to comment on that. Colin, yes, you want to say something or double click on this point?
Just really quickly, from a technical perspective, Google also changed the way opens works about a year ago. So now almost any email you send to a Google Apps account, a Gmail account will get opened. And you won't see those getting opened multiple times anymore because what's happening is Google's loading those images on their server. And so you're not pinging those. And so if you are seeing those multiples, chances are it's either being forwarded around or it's an Outlook account. It's just something to think on because they change that. And if you're seeing your numbers drop or numbers change, that's just one thing that you should be aware of.
That actually brings up a good point. Just kind of like talking about the validity of these emails, Google is ever changing. And if you actually have one email in your batch that you're sending out that is not a valid email anymore, your open rates, because they're going to be going to junk, is going to decrease significantly. So just make sure you use like a validation tool before you even send anything out. I think that's like one of the biggest things that we have had to overcome as well here.
For sure. Google changed a whole bunch. A year and a half ago, they moved their spam filter from Postini to the new AI-based one, which is better and worse. You'll see your friends' emails, your colleagues' emails ending up in your spam box. But what they're looking at is they'll take strings of text that they have seen in emails that ended up in other people's junk, rightly or wrongly, and then they'll start putting those emails in the spam folders as well. So it's something you need to be careful of, especially if you only have one main email that you're sending out. If you keep sending out that one template, and you're never changing it, your emails are going to end up in spam way faster than even if you're just making small modifications. Go ahead, Justin.
No, great points. Just be careful also with like links and GIFs, you know, just because especially if you're going in the enterprise realm, you know, the security levels are super high. So if you actually have, you know, any type of image or link and you've never actually sent them something before, it might go to their spam or junk. So totally. Just a little FYI, just be careful with those.
It's not a great first email. It's a great second email because you've already established that relationship if they've opened it. And also, I'll let Don jump in here. Well, he's up there on mine. But anyway, make sure if you are sending GIFs, call them GIFs, not GIFs, because that drives people crazy, even though that's probably the right way. But make sure you keep them under a megabyte because files over a meg just will tank your response rates.
I think it's a Canadian GIF, I think is what it is, right?
No, come on, man. Vancouver, calling it a GIF right here. I'm saying on
behalf
of Canadians.
Which was one of my favorite places to drive a Ferrari down that mountain.
You betcha.
So,
I prefer to be on the road, not down the mountain, you know.
fair enough. I was also going to say a lot of people have spam filters built in for specific words. And so, you know, you're putting things like discount or free or, you know, so just kind of be cognizant of some of those gotcha catch words that will get called out in spam filters as well, regardless of how well crafted your email might be. If your subject line has, you know, buy one, get one or free or something along those lines that'll be caught in a spam filter, it's going to get filtered out anyway.
Beautiful. All right. Colin, a quick question for you. Somebody basically is asking, without realizing it, if the whole original cold calling 2.0 strategy still works, right? You send an email to somebody and you ask for a referral downwards. They're saying, you know, is it better today to just try to reach a decision maker directly with your email? Should you still go one level above and ask for a referral down? Or is it maybe more practical today, more in a to go a level below and ask for a referral up? You know, you guys know a lot about that. Very quickly, what do you see? Is this still working, or is there something working better than other in terms of who to reach out to get to the decision maker you want to?
Still see it working. I think it depends on who you're selling to and the products that you're selling, what's relevant. You know, the original methodology said go to the CEO or the, you know, the CEO's assistant, the president's assistant, and sort of call and try and, you know, call to them and get referred down. I've seen that work tremendously well. I've seen, you know, going the direct approach where you're being, you're skipping the middle person because you say, I know who the right person is. I'm just going to go right to them. I see that work as well. If you're really working the account and you want to give yourself the best chance of getting in, I've also seen people, and this is not me. This is my buddy Phil Keane. He was on our podcast. We talked about this, but he was talking about going top down and then going bottoms up. And so going to the people, you know, underneath the person that you're trying to target and not selling to them, but asking them, hey, do you have this pain? How do you feel about this? How much does this take? How much time, you know, in your day does this waste? You know, that sort of thing. And you can do it. You can try it over email. Phil was doing it over the phone, but he was doing that in prep to get ready for that call, that email to the person and say, hey, I've talked to some of your people. They said, you know, this is a big priority and they're spending this much time. Because the idea there is if you can bring them new information, you know, to that manager that they might not be aware of or provide them with a thought, something that's provoking, that gets them, that's going to get them to engage way more than another bumper email. So that's a great piece. The short answer is yes, it still works. It's heavily dependent on your sales process and who you're selling to, though. So always test all three.
Beautiful. All right, next question I'll take because it's an easy one to answer. I picked the best ones, which is it creepy to tell people that you've seen how many times they've opened your email? Yes, please. And this is a general piece of advice for salespeople. Knowledge might seem like power, but it depends on how you apply it, right? So just because you think you know something doesn't mean you have to blur it out and try to impress somebody with it. First of all, it's not valuable to me for you to tell me how many times I've opened your email. Like, this provides zero value to my life. You know, I opened your email a few times. Why are we talking about this? Why are we not talking about the content of your email? Why are we not talking about figuring out if this is a good fit and how you can help me? Why are we talking about how many times I've opened the email? It's just dumb. And that also relates to any other kind of information that you think you have. It's important to know some things, right? You do some research, you know something about their LinkedIn profile, you see some tweets they're posting out there, you have some data that you found from some other source. Try to first, in the conversation, in the interaction, in the communication, to verify the data, use the data as contextual enrichment versus impressing people with everything you know about their life. It doesn't work. Don't send me an email and tell me, Stelly, I know you're interested in this, and I know you have two children, and I know you really like that, and I know you were in Croatia this morning. Again, I'm reading all of this, and I already knew all of this, so this provides zero value to my life. It's slightly creepy, but it's really not useful. So no, use these things internally, but don't tell people, I know you just opened my email, so I wanted to call you. It is slightly creepy. At the least, it's definitely not that useful or helpful to the people that you're talking to. All right. Next question, please show of hand, Don, Colin, and Dustin, if you have experience with sending videos in cold emails or in sales emails. Is one of you, right now your sales team do video heavily? Right, Don, I'll throw that to you then. Video, best practices, results seen. What are your two cents on video in sales emails?
Yeah, it's a very personal touch. And there's a lot of companies out there. Internally, we use a company called Vidyard. And so by just reaching out and having a personal touch with the same exact message that you would type in a cold email, but just and to what Colin had alluded to previously, quickly differentiate why we should be having a conversation. And I'm going to be your main point of contact. And I think it behooves you to have at least 1 or 2 minutes to have a quick conversation so I can show you how we differentiate versus whatever it is. You've done your homework, but videos work really well.
Awesome. All right. I think we're nearing the last few minutes of the webinar and questions are still trickling in, which is both awesome and terrible because you're making it impossible for us to get through all of the questions, although we've done a pretty good job. And some of these questions, I'm trying to combine them to answer as much as possible. Any one of you that had a question that we didn't get to answer, I promise you we'll follow up and we'll try to address it in one way or another. We'll route you to the right person in the follow-up. There have been also a lot of very specific questions about how to use CloseEye or how to use MixMax, how to use Intercom for certain use cases. I want to talk about my product. I know Don and Dustin want to, but I know that this is a joint webinar, so I wanted to put these aside and pause them, and then we'll reach out to you individually to help you with your specific use cases of how to use our products. For all of the people that ask more generic questions, what tools should we use when we do a lot of sales email? I'll just throw out MixMax, Intercom, and Close.io. Check out all three products and see if one of those hits your fancy, because we have products that help people with sales emails in one way or another. So check us out for sure. And if you don't like it, send me an email and tell me what you need, and I'll send you to some other service that does what you need. All right, gentlemen, you guys have been amazing up until this point. I'm going to finish this webinar up with just giving all of you the opportunity to just share one last word of advice, right? We covered a bunch of stuff. What is something we didn't get to cover, or something that we covered that you think is easy to kind of get lost in the maze and you want to highlight again and go, hey, if you just spent the last 60 minutes listening to us, asking us questions, and you have the desire to improve the way you do emails, here's one thing you need to do next. Here's one thing you need to think about next. So I'm going to give you gentlemen the floor to give people a last piece of advice before we wrap up the webinar series. And I'm going to go Dustin, Colin, and Don. So Dustin, you go first. What's your one piece of advice you want to leave the webinar attendees with?
Yeah, I think it just is being as tailored as you possibly can and how you're going to help them increase revenue. If you can't think of a way of doing that in an email, then you probably shouldn't be emailing them in the first place. That's how tailored you should be. And I can't hit on it enough, to be honest with you. It's so important.
Beautiful. Colin.
I like what you said earlier about just around people not knowing, or people not hitting their follow-up targets because they don't know what to send, right? All of the emails that we're sending, it doesn't matter if you're sending the one perfect email. If you spent 4 hours writing this amazing template, it's super personalized. If you never follow up on it, you're not going to get any results. And so I think that's the big takeaway. Getting tactical for a quick sec, the way I like to think about my sequences in general, the sequence should tell the story of why we should work together, right? And so when you think about what is the content I want to include, maybe stand up and talk and actually have this conversation with one of your coworkers. Stand up with your laptop, read them your email, and then read them what you say next and what you say next and what you say next. And is this adding value? And if you want to get really tactical about what types of emails should I be including, because it can't all be just content, right? I think about there's bumper content, hey, just bumping this to the top of your email, right? There's educational content, right? And then there's sort of that personalized content, right? So the educational stuff is case studies. Oh, we worked with the customer like this. I thought you'd like this. And then there's that sort of emotional personal connection. That's the third sort of approach. And using a combination of those three, if you've got three sort of generic templates like that, that you can insert your personalization into, it makes it so much easier to actually hit your follow-up targets, because you're not trying to rethink and rewrite the perfect follow-up email every single time. You're just saying, okay, which one do I want to use? 1, 2, or 3. And if you got a tool like MixMax or Close, it's already programmed into what you're going to say. But having those built up for you so that you don't have to rewrite every single time, yeah, super helpful.
Thank you so much, Colin. Don, all right.
Yeah, I'll make it short, sweet, and succinct. You know, early on in the beginning of the call, we talked, is email dead? I mean, there's so many other tools and there's so many other vehicles and communications to reach out and communicate with people these days. Don't stop emailing. It is not dead. Get smarter about how you do it, but continue on. Push on the good fight.
Amazing. All right, yeah. I think lately I had a discussion with Heat and Sean. We determined that good email might be in trouble, but great email is more well in the life than ever before, right? Because it's so rare to get a great email. No matter how many emails you get, the great ones always stand out. So work towards that. Don, Colin, Dustin, thank you so much for your time, your expertise, your passion for the subject. For all of you, thanks for your amazing questions. And I know a lot of people have been asking this in chat. Yes, you're all going to get a recording that you can rewatch. We're going to try to reach out to you with some of the questions we didn't get to address. And if you want to share it within your teams, the video is going to be available to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us. And let's make the world a better place by writing better emails, sending better emails to everybody. Thank you so much. This is it from
us. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.